wasn't hunting this morning, Chris, because if I shot a deer this morning, you know, you can't just wrap it up like that. So, but I was last night, and something was coming, and it smelled me, of course. And so I didn't shoot anything this year, but I had fun sitting in the woods, and it's kind of my time to relax and my annual vacation. It's great to be with you. It was a beautiful morning driving in from New London. This is my wife, Cheryl, and I, and we've been Covenant Missionaries, now they call us Serve Globally Personnel, since 1996. And you guys have been a part of our support for a long time, and I thank you guys for that. And I'm here this morning to tell some stories and give you an update of the things that I'm involved around the world through you guys and through your support. We are currently based in Greensboro, North Carolina, and we've been there the last 5 years. We moved back from after being in Thailand for 20 years to Minnesota. And Cheryl decided Minnesota winters were a little harsh after 20 years in Chiang Mai, Thailand. And so we resettled in Greensboro. And we have two of our adult kids living with us, Noah and Daniel. And our eldest, Eli, lives in Two Harbors here. So it's nice to be around to see Eli as well. Go ahead and go on to... So this was already read, so we'll skip the verse again. But... my life as a missionary has been more about doing things rather than preaching or sharing. I'm more of a hands-on kind of guy, and I chose fish farming as the avenue for how I would help people and do mission work. And so I actually have a master's degree in fish farming from the Asian Institute of Technology in Bangkok. And these are a few pictures from over the years of working with tilapia as the main fish that I've worked with. Go ahead, next photo. This was one of my biggest projects was in Thailand. For 20 years, we ran a fish hatchery that employed all these people and produced about 1.5 million tilapia every month that would go to fish farmers across northern Thailand. And so Covenant World Relief actually helped in the startup of this farm. So projects like this is an example of something that helped launch a project that ran then for 20 years. Go ahead and go to the next picture. This is Anun Sisawan. She was our director, and she was the one more that was doing the Bible teaching and evangelism, and I was more of a background person helping to run the fish hatchery business that we set up. We set up the business so it would be a blessing. Income from selling those fish helped support our church planning ministry, youth ministry, soccer ministry, and go ahead in the next picture or two. This is just another verse I wanted to share just about kind of what it means to do discipleship, and that's what I try to do through mentoring. And so the next picture, is a young guy that I mentored. And that verse, 1 Timothy 2:2, it says, entrust unto others reliable men or people, and they'll be able to teach others. And so through my years of working with A in Thailand, he's like a son to me, and he's now a leader in Thailand, and he was actually sent to a seminary from the funds from that fish hatchery, was baptized in one of our fish ponds there on the farm, and so you can see how business and ministry can kind of work together in places like Thailand. Then this is our youth camp, and A and I built this building together with lots of help from other people, and he learned construction through this, and now he runs a construction company with about 3 different teams. And he's also a coach, a soccer coach, and does that as a ministry, teaches music in the local school as well. And so this is an example of Randy doesn't just do fish farming, but he's trying to mentor and walk alongside people and encourage people. So go ahead, the next picture. Recently I read this book. I started going to Congo about 10 years ago to help with fish farming projects there. And Titus Johnson was the first missionary to go to Congo. And Congo is a good place to read books because you can't really be on your internet. You know, it doesn't work very well there. You do get 2G coverage, so you can send a text, but you can't really do much else. And so I read this book while I was there, and they just had their 100th anniversary of the church in Congo. And so this picture was 1923, so last year they celebrated 100 years since Titus first went. And I just thought I'd share a couple stories about the history of Congo and a few pictures from the book. This was the Mbaka people that Titus ended up going to. When he first went to Congo, he was with African Inland Mission down in another area, and he had heard about this area, the Ubangi area where our covenant churches are now. There's more than 1 million believers in this area that it's almost the whole size of the east coast of the U.S. It's a very large area and very underdeveloped and isolated. But he ended up actually resigning from his African Inland Mission. His fiancée, Bertha, had recently died of dysentery. She was from a Covenant Church in Nebraska, I believe, if I remember right. And he, through all these trials and tribulations, he wanted to go to this Ubangi area to preach the gospel there, that it was an area that no one else was working. And he didn't know how he was going to do it. He has resigned from his job, didn't have any budget, and he started opening the letters that he got after Bertha died. And after he ordered the whole sack of letters, he had $750 that people had sent cash in envelopes, and that was enough money for him to do his whole trip where he went exploring the Ubangi area and where our covenant work began then. So a few more pictures of that, the Mbaka people group, and another picture. When he first entered Karawa, it was known to be a very dangerous place. There was a warlord that ran named Niego. And the Belgians were there, but they couldn't even go up to Karawa because Niego had armed troops. They had sold ivory to buy guns, and he was a feared kind of warlord. And so Titus came riding up on his bicycle. He would often just his group carrying his supplies were a couple hours behind. And so he just sounded like a really fearless person, just maybe a little naive, I don't know. But he's riding up the road, and Niego knew he was coming because people always... Congo, even today, they always know you're coming, when you're coming, and the word spreads quickly. And his soldiers were waiting, and they were trying to decide if they should kill him or welcome him. And they ended up welcoming. Diego stepped out and introduced himself, and he said, "You will live here," and he gave him one of his wife's houses, and he lived in Diego's compound, this warlord who was known to be a cannibal, and I mean, he was a very fierce man. But welcome Titus, and this was Titus put his tent under the roof of the house, and his first sermon that he prepared for, he had invited all these people to come to this first meeting, and he had the tent down and getting ready to talk and going over his Lingala that he barely knew, and it turns out this big fight happened outside, and he had accidentally invited two warring tribes to the first service. And so when he opened the tent, there was just spears and machetes wielded, and he ended up shooing people and telling them to go home. And there were six people that couldn't get up because they were so badly wounded. So his first attempt at an evangelistic service ended up as a hospital event, and luckily nobody died. And that was kind of some of the history of that. But over time... His vision was that he'd have hospitals and schools there in Congo, and some a team of missionaries, and that all happened. And he actually went back, and he became a surgeon at Swedish Covenant. It wasn't for 20 or 30 years until he went back to Congo again. Very interesting. And he actually self-funded and built hospitals on his own when he returned. And so Titus is somebody that he looked like a colonialist wearing his pith hat, right? But recently, some people asked the leaders of Congo, they said, can you tell us stories of, bad colonialist examples of missionaries? And the leaders of the church, the Covenant Church in Congo, they had a hard time coming up with stories because the missionaries really didn't act like colonialists. They were there to love the people and to help them set up their own hospitals and their own nursing schools and help them get started. And now we have a strong leadership of the Congolese, the Covenant Church there. And I've made about 15 trips there. Go ahead and a few other pictures. Some of you might remember Paul Carlson was martyred there during the revolution. He was taken by rebels. And when the Belgian paratroopers came to rescue, he was trying to flee. And one of the other missionaries was trying to pull him over a wall, and he took a bullet to his head. And that was in the, during all the chaos that happened during the revolution there in Congo. And then some of you might have known Jody Levon. She just passed away. And this is her having root beer with the Carlson family. She served as a nurse there in Congo for over 40 years. And it was said that she single-handedly ran the clinic up at Wasolo for 10 years when nobody else was around to help do that. And so these are some of the people that have served ahead of me as in Congo. And then currently, working with the next slide. This is Paul Norin in the fish pond, and Paul and I work together on the fish projects in Congo. This man's name is he's Imbaka, like the tribal group that are in that region, and his name is Nzenge, which means tiger fish, which is a great name for a fish farmer. They have a tiger fish that's a very big fish in the Congo River, and we've helped train him on how to run a small fish hatchery there. And he told this story recently to us. He said, people go out with all these fish hooks and poles, and they'll put out 300 poles overnight. And when they come back in the morning, they won't catch a single fish in the wild. It's just, there's not many fish around anymore because it's been overfished in the waters around that area. If you were near the Congo River, some of these big rivers, you'd still catch fish. But in these smaller tributaries, they're just overfished. And so he said, this, setting up ponds like this, I can help feed my family. I can sell it and help my kids with education bills and stuff. So he was thanking us for teaching him the skills to do this. Another picture. This is Paul and Cheryl. And Paul was actually born right there in Kerawa. He remembered Titus as a missionary. He speaks about 7 different languages, and he's an expert in agriculture. And him and I work together. His wife, Cheryl, is a nurse, and she works with the pharmacy department at the hospital there in Kerawa. And so they're great examples also to me of just what it means to serve and love people long term for such a long time. Oftentimes, Paul will put out chairs outside every evening, and people will just come, and he'll sit outside and visit with people. But there'll be oftentimes people just waiting in the morning with all these dire needs that they have. Congo's one of the poorest countries in the world. And it's actually, some people say, going backwards in time and development, where the rest of the world's going forward just from the isolation that they have there and political instability and stuff. So we do have working hospitals and stuff, but you'd be probably pretty aghast at the conditions that the doctors and nurses are working in there. And we have the Paul Carlson Partnership that just celebrated 60 years that continues to work doing training and getting supplies that they need. This is Pastor Dole. He's the director of the Fish Project in Congo, and he was also the cabinet director for the Covenant Church of Congo in the last administration. And so he's the one that's really doing the on-the-ground work day in and day out, teaching seminars and helping make everything run. He's just written a really big proposal that we're going to be working on to help all the women's group in the whole evangelical, bigger than the Covenant group, across the country doing fish farming. And so he thinks very big, and he sends me these big proposals, so we're going to have to. But it's already funded, I guess, too, so that's the good news, because a lot of times he'll write a proposal and ask me to come up with the funding. So this is nice that he actually has a funding from another source to do this project. So that's going to be my next trip in February here. We're going to be talking with this, coordinating this big project to do cage farming. Next picture. This is just an example of the little farm that we set up there in Kerawa, this one's in Gemena in Congo, and we just breed the tilapia nets, and all these babies just came from a 14-day cycle of breeding. And then these fish, if you go to the next picture, are going out to fish farmers. We have about 30,000 fish ponds and about 700 associations of fish farmers spread across that area where the Covenant is, and we're trying to help them to get, you know, better fish, strains of fish, and techniques for growing them, real simple techniques to minister to their health and help their family. So another project that I've been working with, I've been to Haiti quite a few times. I started going to Haiti when we moved back to Minnesota in 2013, and I was working in Port-au-Prince area on some big fish projects, and then I was working in up near Cap-Haitien. But most recently, I've been helping Evans Paul, who's another colleague of mine with Serve Globally. He was born in Haiti. His wife is Mexican-American, and she went to North Park, so that was kind of his in and how he met Covenant Circles. And he's an ordained minister now, missionary. And so I've been twice now to La Victoire in northern Haiti, where he was born. And we've been working on fish projects. Go ahead. This was my trip in September. And this was a new cafeteria building, and these were all the kids that were coming to register for their first day of school at a school that Evans helped put together. All these farmers came from 27 districts, and many of them walked for many hours to come to a meeting that Evans was holding for agricultural projects at the meeting. And it's so neat to see the dedication of these farmers to want to help their families and to learn new techniques. We're going to do some fish farming projects with some of them. And this is just a reminder of tilapia. And if people say, is tilapia a bad fish? I say, well, no. Jesus ate tilapia. So that's my answer for you. This was the only fish that was in Galilee, the only big fish. And so any of the historical, you know, stories of the miraculous catch of fish, that would have been a tilapia. And so I love this picture. This is the risen Christ barbecuing tilapia on the shores as the disciples didn't know what to do, and they went back to their old job of fishing, and that night they didn't catch anything. But Jesus said, you know, throw your net on the other side of the boat, and they caught all these fish. And so this is the risen Lord eating tilapia, and so it is a good fish, and we have it in over 100 countries. And the nice thing about it is it eats phytoplankton, and so it's very efficient when you think about getting a high protein value, you know, protein, animal protein coming from a very simple organism. We're not wasting feeding fish to make a fish like some of the fish that we hear stories about, you know, salmon or trout and things. So that's the fish I focused on for the last 40 years or so, and continue to do so. And upcoming, my main focuses these days are Congo and Haiti. I mean, I could do all I could do in either of those countries and never be enough, right, for some of the needs that people have for protein. There's a saying in Congo, they only eat about 6 chickens a year per family. So put that in perspective of how little animal protein people eat. And they say, yeah, when missionaries comes, it's hard on the chickens. That's one of their sayings, because they tend to kill a chicken and feed us, right, because they're such gracious hosts. And so we're trying to help them with food production, and not just with fish farming, but Paul's got all kinds of ag programs. The challenge for Congo right now especially is they have so many young people. Like a typical family might have 8 kids. And in the past, they were losing more kids to malnutrition and stuff. Well, that's gotten better. But then how do you feed 8 kids and help put them through school and all these? It creates a lot of issues, and people's land sizes around the world are shrinking, what you have to farm on, because you've split up your farms among your, you know, descendants, and land size gets smaller. So there's some big challenges for us in a lot of places in the world of how are we going to help do sustainable food production for communities. And that's been my focus, and thank you guys for a chance just to share with you a bit this morning, to give you a picture of that and get to see a few of the great people that I get to work with around the world. So thank you.
As long as